welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on how HER2-targeted therapies can be incorporated into the management of patients with colorectal cancer. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Seagen, Inc. This activity is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this section, a patient advocate and survivor of colorectal cancer joins a medical oncologist and an advanced practice nurse to discuss how the multidisciplinary team can support patients with HER2-positive colorectal cancer.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kristen Siamber, an oncologist from the Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee, in the United States. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Kelly Roan, a colorectal cancer advanced practice nurse at the Mayo Clinic in Phoenix, Arizona, in the United States. I'm also delighted to be joined by Mr. Scott Wilson, a survivor of colorectal cancer and a patient advocate from Denver, Colorado. Mr. Wilson was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer with liver metastasis in 2016 at age 48 years. He underwent a colon resection, removing 13 centimeters and 40 weeks of chemotherapy. In August 2017, he was told he had no evidence of disease. He had a liver resection in December 2017 and was on every other week maintenance immunotherapy with panitumumab. Together today, we will be discussing multidisciplinary team care for patients with HER2-positive colorectal cancer. So I'm really glad to be joined by you both today, Kelly and Scott. And I wanted to start off our discussion by talking a little bit about how we think about treatment, decision-making, what's important both to the patient as well as the healthcare provider as we kind of together come up with a plan for the treatment of cancer. So Scott, why don't we start with you? Obviously, you were the patient, and so this was very personal to you. When you were diagnosed and first knew that you were going to be on chemotherapy, sort of what was important when you were deciding on potential treatments and discussing with your healthcare team how you would move forward in the treatment of your disease?
I think the first word that springs to mind is panic. And you know, you're under 50. You've just been told you have a seriously life-threatening condition. Google's just told you that you've got a 10% chance of survival at stage 4. And usually in life, when you have panic, instinct kicks in. And we don't have instincts in terms of how to deal with a diagnosis like that. So I think you're really looking for very solid direction and advice at that point, and trust. I had some superb advice from friends in Denver about some people that I could speak to that were very well trusted in the colorectal cancer community. So I was able to reach out to them, find a very strong recommendation for a clinician that would support me. We ended up with two fantastic clinicians, one a surgeon and one my quarterback, if you like, oncologist. And as soon as I got to know them and that trust just grew, then your instincts and fear, if you like, subsides a little bit and you start to trust their process. So I think at that point, I just needed very solid, practical advice from trusted experts.
Thank you so much for that. You know, that is, as an oncologist myself, that's what I hope. I hope that my patients trust me and our team, because obviously we're all on the same page and trying to work for the best of the patient. So that's good to hear. But I also totally understand your panic at that diagnosis. No one expects that. And as we're seeing colorectal cancer younger and younger, you know, that unfortunately has become a more common experience. Kelly, could you tell us a little bit about, from your perspective as a healthcare provider, how do you think about patient preferences and priorities as you're thinking about treatments? You know, obviously, many times we do have options for patients. There may not be one particular right way. How do you think about that, and how do you consider patient preferences as you're thinking about treatment options?
Well, I think it's important that the patient communicate. I think we assume that patients are panicked and afraid, but it's important that we as clinicians encourage our patients to communicate with us what their goals are. If if you are a patient who has been told, I have, you know, this stage four malignancy, or even if it's stage three, you have to communicate to your clinicians how aggressive you want to be. If we don't hear from you that you are looking to be very aggressive and attempt to get to a cure, we don't necessarily go that route because we don't know that you want to be aggressive. And so we have to ask and you have to let us know. And so you have to have a conversation about what your goals are. Otherwise, how do we get there?
I think that's a great point. We as healthcare providers always, I think, naturally think about, okay, what is the most aggressive to get the best outcome. But you're right, patients may have different goals and preferences, and that's really key in determining how we move forward. So thank
exactly.
you. Yeah. Scott, how was, you told us a little bit about which clinicians were involved in your care. I'm curious to hear, how was the communication between you and them, between what your impression of their communication amongst themselves was? Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. And there's a key player that I would introduce here as well. And that's my wife, Yayoni, as a caregiver. And I don't think any of us can underestimate the importance of the role of the caregiver at that point. So when I talk about panic and, you know, your brain literally goes to mush. It's your caregiver, invariably, it's the person that's asking the sensible, practical questions and having those conversations. And there would be moments we would leave the oncologist's office and I would say, he says such and such. Is no, he didn't. This is what he did. So just having that sort of common sense approach from your caregiver, who remembers also going through an emotional trauma at that point. But in terms of communication from the team, I learned very quickly that these guys do talk. And, you know, they're very much looking after my interests in the background. Even to this day, 6 years later, my very first surgeon is still getting reports of all of my scans and that kind of thing. So this almost aftercare service that they've got going on is fantastic. So really, really great teamwork. It was very clear to me that my oncologist, as I said earlier, was the quarterback. He was the one that was coordinating different options. He was also speaking privately to other groups, you know, when you have cancer tables, if you like, about, you know, what are the different surgical options long term. So he was very much my key medical clinical support. But then his team below him would take care of some of the more emotional or practical things that are non-clinical, like, you know, skin care or side effect treatment, that kind of thing. That came from the team that's around him. And to me, you know, there's a whole swathe of oncological nurses, which I call super nurses, and just their role in keeping our spirits alive, keeping practical advice, keeping us on track is absolutely invaluable.
That's great. It's certainly something we always strive for, to have good communication amongst ourselves and with our patients. I'm glad that yours was a good experience. Kelly, how, from a healthcare provider perspective, what are some of the challenges that we face in communication, both with other team members and with the patients? What are some pearls that you've learned over the years in terms of how you can best optimize communication?
I think that one of the things that I've noticed with patients is a lot of times they don't want to tell us side effects that they're experiencing because they think they're normal. Or they think, if I tell them that I'm having this thing, they may stop my treatment or change my treatment. And so one of the things that I try to express to the patient is, listen, we're here to help you get through this process. You've never had chemotherapy before, and you don't necessarily have the tools you need yet to manage your side effects. Don't assume that you should be having some awful side effect and let it continue. Most of what happens, we can manage, but if we don't know what's happening, we can't help you. We can't connect you with the super nurses to make things better. So, you know, I encourage them, you're not bothering us. We want to help you. Our goal is to keep you out of the hospital so that you can stay on track with your treatment. And so we try to express that to our patients. And you know, sometimes we have to get a little stern with patients and say, hey, you know, why didn't you tell us you were having 10 episodes of diarrhea a day? Well, I thought I was supposed to have that. No, you're absolutely not. And so once we kind of wade through those instances, the patients are like, oh, yeah, you are here. And so they feel a little more comfortable talking to us about what's happening.
Yeah, it's certainly a team approach. And I agree. I have many patients who are very stoic and do not want to talk about side effects or as you said, think that this is normal. And I think setting appropriate expectations of what is normal and what is not, and making sure that patients know that we're there for them, I think is really key.
And I think sometimes people get somewhat embarrassed by some of the side effects that they have. Nobody really wants to talk about how many times they're having a bowel movement every day, or if they're having a lot of gas or bloating. And, you know, we have to make that okay for them so that they don't feel embarrassed by it.
Kelly, as we think about making treatment decisions for patients with colorectal cancer, I feel like it's a very multidisciplinary disease where, you know, the medical oncologist often is sort of, as Scott mentioned, the quarterback. But clearly the other healthcare providers are also integrally involved in making in the decision-making process and making plans. How do you think teams, multidisciplinary teams, can work best together for the good of the patient?
One of the things that we do at our institution is we do tumor conferences. I think that's a pretty common occurrence at most cancer centers, where we get together. It's every other week for our colorectal cancer tumor conference. And it's a meeting where the surgeons will come, and the colorectal surgeons, and then the liver surgeons, the oncologists, radiation oncologists. We all get together, and patients that are newly diagnosed or who may be having some unusual presentation or response to their treatment, we all get together and talk about the pathology, the imaging, and how can we best treat the patient. And sometimes there are disagreements, and we kind of, discuss it and come to a consensus as to how the patient should be managed. And then the oncologist who is in charge of that patient will go back and present the opinions of the group. And then if someone needs to go see a surgeon, say for a liver resection, they'll be referred to that surgeon. And it's just a good way, a more efficient way for people to kind of get together and talk about a patient all at one time.
That's great. I definitely concur with that. The multidisciplinary kind of tumor board approach has been really essential for my practice. And you get different experiences and different perspectives. And I think that's extremely valuable and really benefits the patient overall.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, I'd like to close this part of the discussion. I wanted to thank Scott and Kelly for their just wonderful insights today. I think this has been really informative for all of us, not only here in this discussion, but for our viewing audience. So we hope you found these discussions useful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget there are 3 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.